Kathy Durkin versus the City of Chicago, and Mr. Nick Hunt. I'm sorry, Mr. Hunt, I'm looking this way. Mr. Hunt. I actually know two very nice women whose first name is Keith. All right.
May it please the court. Kathy Durkin, over the course of a three-month period, was subjected to no less than 35 separate incidents of harassment, sex-based harassment, and actual sexual harassment. Notwithstanding that, the district court entered summary judgment incorrectly, we maintain, for several reasons. First, Farahar and Ellerith does not apply when there has been adverse employment action. And in this case, there was. There were two types of adverse employment action. There was a denial of training. There was also the actual termination. The whole purpose behind sending a new recruit to the police academy is training. It is their very reason for being during that four-month period.
Now, she received 40 hours of what seems to have been harassment-free training in Mattoon. So how do we say that she was deprived of training and that she was adversely affected by that deprivation?
In several ways. First of all, she never would have had to go to Mattoon had she not been harassed during the 20 hours she received with Peck. And that 20 hours was really anything but but training. It didn't last the full 20 hours, and it was laden with harassment. When she took the test after that 20 hours, her fourth attempt, Gutierrez testified that he had already told Charlie Roberts, the assistant deputy superintendent, that she would not pass if Peck was there. Peck is there. Roberts then suggests that Gutierrez show up. He does, and then is ordered by Christian to get into the office. Not once, not twice, but three times in a very clear effort. Then Kathy Durkin takes the shooting test, and here's where the evidence gets really interesting. Kathy Durkin testified that she asked for a practice test and was told she could not take one. So she takes the test without having a practice round first and passes. Uh-oh, what do we do now? At this point, Lieutenant Christian says, oh no, you wanted a practice test. Now that's Kathy Durkin's testimony. On the other side of things, we have Christian's testimony in his deposition. He completely turns that story around, and we know he's lying because when Christian testifies, he says that he never denied her a practice test. She said she didn't want a practice test. And so there was never a practice test given. But if you look at Exhibit DD in the summary judgment papers on our 56.1 papers, you see the actual shooting record in there. And in that shooting record, it shows that a practice test was given and a passing score achieved.
Okay, here's what I think we need. Peck, who's the main allegedly the main offender here, wasn't involved in those decisions. You know, the refusal to accept the Mattoon scores or to accept the alleged practice round. How do we connect his actions with those decisions in order to create an issue of fact here?
We know that Peck was there at the time of the testing. We know that Kathy Durkin had complained about Peck. We know that Christian knew that Kathy Durkin had complained about this process, had asked for Gutierrez to be present, was denied that. We know that that as a result of Peck's involvement and his close reporting of that involvement to Christian, that Christian was aware of the problems that she was having. Christian denies her the test at the time, or denies her the practice round at the time, says that she failed that test. Then it's all taken away from her, and then she's sent by Clark to the 40 hours in Mattoon, which you're correct is harassment-free training. Also, and when she's down there, she actually passes the exam. Another issue of fact, because Clark says, I told her she'd have to come back and take the exam again when she was back here. But Durkin testified that she was told that if she completed successfully in Mattoon, that would be it. In any event, she takes the test in Mattoon, she gets the certificate, the same certificate that every other Chicago police officer has, and in fact every other law enforcement official in the state of Illinois, according to Stewart's testimony. We know from Gutierrez, we also know from Denny Stewart, that when she's allowed to take this test in a harassment-free environment without her harasser being present to intimidate her, and without the person who has provided supportive training to her, Gutierrez, being ordered in the back office, being told to stay away, and being clearly resented by all of the range personnel and by Lieutenant Christian, that she can pass and she does fine.
What evidence, as opposed to speculation, do we have that Heck was involved in making the decision?
Well, ultimately, the decision, I guess two ways. First of all, ultimately, the decision flows from the passing or failing of the test. Gutierrez testified that Peck consciously subverted Durkin's training, intentionally, continually changed her shooting stance every time she started getting close to passing. So we know that he was involved in that sense. We also know from the testimony of both Peck and from Christian and the others that what was going on with Kathy Durkin was being reported by Peck, that Christian was keeping a very close eye on this situation, was communicating with the range personnel on a regular basis. And so from that conversation...
But isn't that his job?
Yes, but it ends being his job when the superintendent, Clark, is trying to get her remedial training and is trying to get her supportive efforts, and Christian and Peck are trying to undermine that very process. It's very clear, and what makes it so clear is Gutierrez. You look at his testimony, and what Gutierrez says is he sent down there. Originally, he doesn't want to go. Gutierrez is not a range officer. He's out in the field. But Roberts calls on him because he's a range instructor, certified range instructor. Sends him down there and says, I've got somebody I want you to coach. Gutierrez says, no, I really don't want to do that. I'm afraid that I'll alienate the people down at the range. Roberts orders him to go down there. He shows up. By the time he meets Durkin, he has been told of so many stories that he actually stood Durkin out there and had her turn around and say, you look nothing like what they told me. So he looks at this situation, and when he gets down there, he is confronted not only by Peck, but also by Ferraro. And at this point, everybody knows that she has complained, and everybody knows that she has beefed, because when she's there, or when Gutierrez is there, he is confronted by these two range officers, Peck and Ferraro, and is actually told by Ferraro that if anything happens to Peck, Ferraro is going to quit.
Let me ask you this. Why should firearms instructors be considered supervisors?
Because according to the manual of the Chicago Police Department, every instructor is deemed a supervisor, and that is the actual language in there, that they are supervisors, and that you must accord them the same respect as any other person would accord someone who is at the rank of sergeant or above. Second of all, we know he's a supervisor under the Hall case because we know that he's got the ability to discipline recruits. And he not only has the ability to discipline, but he has specifically said that he has done so, as did Kathy Durkin, as did Gutierrez. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Bernstein.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Dory Bernstein. I represent the EEOC. In rejecting Kathy Durkin's claims of sex discrimination and harassment, the district court erred in two fundamental respects. First, the court failed to recognize the tangible consequences of the harassment and discrimination Durkin experienced during firearms training. And second, the court refused to consider evidence of sex-based harassment in connection with her claims of discriminatory training and discharge. Durkin's evidence was that range instructor Peck failed to give her appropriate firearms training to which she was entitled as a CPD recruit. Instead of properly exercising his delegated authority to train Durkin to shoot more accurately, Peck engaged in abusive conduct that other instructors testified served no legitimate instructional purpose and violated CPD training policies. The evidence also showed that Peck's adverse treatment of Durkin was motivated by gender-based animus. If the jury credits this evidence that Durkin was denied appropriate job-related training because of her gender, the CPD is vicariously liable for the tangible adverse action under this court's decision in Pafford versus Herman.
But how do we deal with the fact that ultimately she was provided the training that she needed?
Your Honor, it's funny in this case because she complained, and in response, CPD officials took actions designed to ameliorate the effects of the discrimination she suffered in training. However, Academy officials expressed resentment at every turn, every time the CPD tried to do something to respond to her complaints and her husband's complaints about harassment. Academy officials effectively sabotaged those efforts, and the key to understanding that is to read Raul Gutierrez's testimony. But in effect, that evidence demonstrates that the seven practice rounds that she fired under Officer Gutierrez with somebody who was training her properly, who gave her a fair opportunity, shows that she passed every single one of those practice rounds. The next day, she took her fourth qualification attempt, and she passed the first time around. They didn't count that, and at that point, she failed. Deputy Superintendent Clark sends her to Mattoon. She has 40 hours of training. She passes. In other words, in an atmosphere given appropriate training and in a fair opportunity to pass, she is capable of shooting, and she meets the Illinois requirements. The Illinois statutory requirements and the CPD's voluminous training manuals and materials, which are part of the record, none of them say you must pass this exam at this firing range in this academy. All they say is you have to meet this standard. She met that standard. She had a state certification, but the CPD officials refused to accept it. And that is evidence of retaliation. The district court in this case, in evaluating Kathy Durkin's retaliation claim, applied a rigid formula saying if she doesn't have direct evidence of retaliation, which this court has said is effectively an admission that we're never going to let you pass this test because you complained. She doesn't have that. If she doesn't have that, the district court said, she's got to have evidence of a similarly situated individual, meaning somebody who complained and failed the exam but was retained. Kathy Durkin is not going to be able to provide evidence of a similarly situated individual. Why? Because of precisely the ameliorative efforts that CPD officials took in response to her retaliation complaints. No one else was sent to Mattoon. So when you look to the 40 hours of training at Mattoon and say, look, didn't they effectively cure the discrimination in her training, then, you know, effectively the CPD officials, the academy officials, then say, well, we're going to basically undercut the effects of that harassment-free training and her passing score by saying, we're not going to count that score. We're going to make you pass here on the range where you were subjected to hours of abuse and gender-based harassment. I see my time is up, and if there are no further questions.
Ms. Luce, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. In the interest of time this morning, I will limit my argument to primarily the 2 points in response to what was discussed this morning. First, I will explain how there's no basis for employer liability for the alleged harassing conduct of Durkin's instructors, and second, I will explain how there's insufficient evidence to support a gender discrimination claim based on Durkin's treatment by Lieutenant Christian during the fourth and fifth firearms tests. And for the remaining issues, in particular the Section 1983 claims, will rest on our brief. As for Durkin's sexual harassment claim, under Title VII, it is very important for purposes of determining employer liability for harassing conduct, whether the alleged harasser is a supervisor.
Okay, under your definition of supervisor, would any of the persons with whom Durkin was in daily contact be considered her supervisor?
I don't know about daily contact, but certainly people that she interacted with periodically, the supervisors at the firing range, we don't dispute for purposes of summary judgment that Lieutenant Christian, for example, was a supervisor for purposes of Section 1983.
See, if the person with authority to hire and fire is not the one who has the authority to control her daily actions, doesn't it defeat the purpose of Title VII to to interpret the definition of supervisors so restrictively?
I think it actually furthers the purposes of Title VII, because under the case law interpreting Title VII, the word supervisor is a term of art that extends to those who have the ability to affect the terms and conditions of an employee's employment. It does not extend to cover every employee that outranks another or who can direct day-to-day operations. As a layperson might use the word, such lower-level management might be a supervisor, as we commonly use the term, but the term is in use in the context of Title VII. A supervisor is not such a person. Instead, a precise kind of delegation of authority is required, the authority to affect the terms and conditions of employment, and that's made clear by this court's decisions in Parkins.
Well, and here, her, quote, supervisors did have the power to discipline her. If there was some screw-up to require extra training, I mean, there was a lot of power that her firearms instructors had.
Well, I don't know that Officer Peck would be able to assign additional training. Others could, but Officer Peck was not involved in the decision-making about whether Durkin would or would not get training. He was assigned to actually do the training.
Right, but he could discipline her. I guess that's what that standing he was having her do, I think, on one foot.
Right. And I would submit that the word discipline has different connotations, and the ability to discipline in that way is not discipline in the sense that would affect the terms and conditions of employment, such as suspension or a reprimand that is, you know, a step in the progression of actually terminating an employee.
How about fainting?
Excuse me?
How about fainting? After you stand in a small box. Go ahead.
I certainly don't argue for purposes of summary judgment that Officer Peck's conduct, according to the way Durkin has characterized it, was inappropriate, and we don't even contest that it might be gender-based or actionable harassment. But I think the point for purposes of employer liability is that if Officer Peck achieved indirectly what he had no authority to do directly, then that is in very definition of an intangible employment action. He had no authority to take a tangible employment action that would affect the terms and conditions of her employment. And for that reason,
he certainly seems to have had the cloak of authority, doesn't he?
Well, I think under Farragher and Ellis, the court took pains to parse out what makes a what is the difference between a co-employee and a supervisor, and it is the person who has lurking behind their conduct the threat of a change to the terms and conditions of employment that is acting with the cloak of the employer, with the cloak of the authority of the employer. In this circumstance, Officer Peck is more like a coworker in that. If anything, he might have, you know, he might run into Durkin the next day and have ability to harass her, but Durkin did not have to fear that if she reported Officer Peck, he would retaliate or he could take affect the terms and conditions of her employment. And in fact, the record in this case indicates that when she did complain, she had no further contact with Officer Peck, but was afforded training off-site. Officer Peck simply did not have that kind of authority.
Okay, now that off-site training, the firearms test that Durkin failed was a state rather than a CTD requirement.
That's correct.
And Durkin passed that test at a location to which the CPD sent her, right?
Right.
Right. So can you point to any written policy or other rule that would indicate that the refusal to accept those scores was a neutral one rather than a result of discrimination or retaliation?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's Durkin's burden to show that whatever whatever the reason was for having her take the test again at the fire at the police academy, which is where every other recruit took the test, was the result of either gender-based animosity or a retaliatory reason. And there's simply no evidence, either circumstantial or direct, to indicate that whatever the motivations of Lieutenant Christian or Deputy Superintendent Clark were, that it was that they made the decisions they did based on gender or for retaliatory reason. And since we've shifted that direction, I'll discuss the claims of discrimination and retaliation during the fourth and fifth examinations.
Was all the discovery completed in this case?
I believe so, Your Honor. I certainly Durkin has not claimed that that more needs to be discovered on this question. Her claims of discrimination and retaliation by Lieutenant Christian also fail because there is simply no evidence that supports an inference that Christian's conduct during either the fourth or fifth examination had anything to do with her gender or any complaints about sexual harassment. There's no direct evidence or circumstantial evidence with the use of the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting test or without that the reason Lieutenant Christian acted the way he did was gender or retaliation. The McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting test is simply not useful here because these aren't the kind of suspicious circumstances that inform on the question of whether Christian actually was motivated by gender animosity. The fact that everyone else in her class cast does not support even a liberal inference that gender was the reason Christian treated her the way she claims he did in her final attempts to qualify. Indeed, there's no comparative basis at all to those in her class who took the test earlier because only she was there for the fourth time and Lieutenant Christian was not even present when anyone else stepped up to take their exam.
But I guess what concerns me is that even if Christian was using objective criteria, that is, the fact that she failed the test the final time, the whole reason that she failed the test, or at least that plaintiff's position, is because of the harassment she suffered from those at the training academy. So, in other words, Christian didn't really have a valid result. It's true on its face she failed, but there were reasons for that that were based on harassment.
And to the extent she's seeking to hold the city liable for the harassment that she allegedly received by Officer Peck, she cannot do so because she hasn't shown the city's negligence in discovering or remedying that harassment. Since her harassers were not supervisors for purposes of Title VII, she must show the city's negligence to cause her harassment, and she failed to do that because she did not report any sexually harassing conduct to anyone who she could reasonably believe would register a sexual harassment complaint. She did complain about a lot of things to a lot of people. I think it can be fairly said people were aware she was having problems and perhaps even having problems with Officer Peck, but she said nothing to signal that she was or even that she believed she was being sexually harassed until much later, until she spoke with Deputy Superintendent Clark. And when she finally did report some sex-based conduct, she was afforded the extraordinary relief of additional training and a fifth opportunity to qualify. Under these facts, she has failed to prove negligence in discovering or remedying the alleged harassment. Nor does she offer evidence. I've already discussed that the fourth and fifth examinations, there's no evidence that Lieutenant Christian was motivated by gender animosity. And there's also no evidence to support inference of a retaliatory motive with or without McDonnell Douglas. There's simply nothing. We don't contest that a circumstantial case may, in some cases, be permitted without McDonnell Douglas, but there's no circumstantial evidence that whatever motivated the police department's conduct during the fourth and fifth examinations was in retaliation. If you look closely at the record, you'll see that any resentment that was supposedly voiced was not about sexual harassment. Indeed, at the fourth exam, there had been no claim of sexual harassment yet. Whatever Roberts or anyone else may have resented, it was not a claim of sexual harassment, which had not even been made at that point. If there are no further questions, I will briefly conclude. For these reasons, as well as those in our brief, we ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
To respond to a couple of counsel's comments, first of all, on the issue of complaints, Kathy Durkin complained about sex harassment and discrimination. She told about the facts. She told about what was happening. She told her initial homeroom instructor, which the city chooses to ignore.
Did she call it sex discrimination?
She didn't use those magic words, but she certainly talked about the way she was being treated and the way she was being abused. She recounted this at length to Gutierrez, and he understood what it was. He told Charlie Roberts what it was. They all understood. Certainly Clark understood. They understood it was sex harassment. The key in this case is that these firearm training personnel are supervisors. As this court recognized in Pafford, training is an employment benefit. And whereas here it is really the very reason for her existence at the academy, the denial of training, the impact on that training, is the denial of a tangible employment benefit. Peck told her that she would never be a cop, and he made sure of it based on how he trained her, not only by not giving her training and by harassing her, but by actually trying to undermine and change her shooting position so that every time Gutierrez saw her, she was holding the gun a different way, standing a different way, had her head cocked a different way, so that she never would have been able to hit the broadside of a barn if she kept following Peck's instructions. She was denied in her training, and the fact that she was denied in this training shows that there was a causal nexus. The firearms test under the court's decision in Gawley on the issue of supervisor, this court, although it did not specifically rule on that ground, specifically stated that it was reluctant to conclude that to find that the harasser was not aided in the harassment by virtue of his supervisory position because the harasser was in a paramilitary organization in which subordinates were required to obey their superiors under a very similar set of rules as to what Kathy Durkin had to operate here.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. We're going to go on. Case number 3.